Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and I'll be talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. You are listening to another episode of Who's Reading the Organon? And as you know, I do love Twitter. My favorite part of Twitter are the motivational quotes that uplift the way I feel each day. And I think that it is a powerful message when we all think these thoughts together. So here we go. Do not give up is the name of someone's Twitter profile. And she says, to the question of your life, you are the answer. And to the problems of your life, you are the solution. Quoted Joe Cordera. Another one is, where there is great love, there are always miracles. By Willa Cather, the famous author, and that was from Julianne Turner and Evolve Well. So I feel like, you know, homeopaths always talk about miracles happening, and sometimes we get shot down for that. But she tells you when there is love and when we have that passion for our art and for our skill and for the potential of what homeopathy can do, there truly are miracles. Another new Twitter connection I have is with someone named Backronym. It's like he does these acronyms, and he did one the other day on memory, M-E-M-O-R-Y, which he says are marred events, minuscule observations rattle you. So the best in life is to forgive and forget and live happily. Boy, I really have a few more of these. One more of the Twitter motivational thoughts from Fast Help, Fast Self Help. It's a tongue twister to say that, but she has the best tweets going. And hers says, wisdom is knowing what to do next. Skill is knowing how to do it. And virtue is doing it. That is a quote by David Starr. Now, news for on the HWC network. I'm thinking that this Blog Talk Radio show, Who's Reading the Organon, could become a truly news show. But here are a few things that are happening on the network. There is a reflection about the Tibetan earthquake by Stephanie Niles. She posted a YouTube link in the live chat. And that earthquake occurred April 14th, 2010, with very little real publicity or news in the networks about it. It was a 7.1 magnitude earthquake that killed 300 and injured 8,000 in Tibet. She says, Om Mani Padme Om. Mark Moody is doing excellent research to heal the planet using sustainable agriculture. So I'd like you to take a look at what he is doing and assist him in his venture. He teaches us how to plant by the stars in the Considerata project. And there are links to his website there. And we do need to use pesticide and insecticide-free methods to plant our gardens. A couple more things is Dr. Gary Weaver has really taken off from Dr. Sethana's Gay Carr's homeopathy quiz. She keeps putting up these fantastic little mystery quizzes, and so Gary has put one up, and check it out. He calls it a simple case of scratching and itching, and I can't, I'm itching to learn more from him. And I think we can get started. Oh, one more big news event is homeopathy is witchcraft. It says the top UK health body. And Dr. Badani Navneet says that homeopathy is the second largest growing alternative therapy in the world and has been termed witchcraft by the British Medical Association, the BMA. Please put your comments there. We would like to hear what you have to say, blog about it, have a discussion, and tweet about it. And I'm going to check now to see whether we have our special, I don't see Vera on the network.
So hi, I'm online, though.
Oh, you are online. I'm glad.
I'm online.
Okay, cool. I think my computer was not updated, and now I do see you're on air. I'm going to give the show to you now.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Hey. This is Vera. I understand I'm now a member of a coven, a homeopathy world community coven of witchcraft. It's interesting to know that the HWC is now the homeopathy world coven instead of the homeopathy world community. We'll save that one up for next Halloween.
We're going to change really that for
some. It's funny.
Yeah, we'll try anything. Okay, I'm ready to go with our aphorisms or our studies.
Okay, well, actually this evening, well, for me this evening, for you guys it's somewhat earlier in the day. I have a challenge. I'm just curious to know whether anyone can make a recipe including spiced cakes, crude medicinal vegetables, herbs, roots, asparagus, onions, celery, and beer, because this would be apparently the most anti-homeopathy dish that one could serve up. Let's go to read I've been calling it a can of worms, these two aphorisms, 259 and 260. We read 259 yesterday, but Debbie, I think it will bear repetition, right?
Do you want me to read that part?
You want to go ahead, read 259, 260, and then I'll get stuck into the aphorism, maybe.
Okay, I'm using the Kunsley version, so it may differ a little bit from your Boricke. So here it goes. Considering the smallness of the dose, which in homeopathy is necessary as it is effective, it is easy to understand that during treatment, everything that could have any medicinal action must be removed from the diet and the daily regimen so that the subtle dose is not overwhelmed and extinguished, not even disturbed by any foreign medicinal influence. And there is a little post note, footnote there, with the soft, and we did that poetry, so I don't need to repeat it. Then on, do you want me to continue?
Continue to 260, and then I'll read the footnote of 260.
Cool. 260 says that for the chronically ill, it is all the more necessary to seek out carefully such obstacles to cure, because the disease has usually been aggravated by such harmful medicinal influences and by other errors of living which often go unrecognized.
Right. Now, Hahnemann starts giving us a list. And one of my problems personally with this list is that Hahnemann smoked, and he apparently smoking was okay.
Well, everybody has a vice.
Yeah. Well, my maiden name was actually Weiss, and various people used to say that everyone has to have a vice. But
everyone needs a little bit of Vera.
Yeah, I give pieces of my mind around freely. Okay, let's look at the footnote here and see what we think it's created within homeopathy, because it is interesting. Hanuman says in the footnote to 260, when he's talking about disease-causing errors in the diet and regimen, he's giving us some examples. Coffee, for those coffee lovers. Fine Chinese and other herb teas. Beer prepared with medicinal vegetable substances, unsuitable for the patient's state. So-called fine liqueurs made with medicinal spices. All kinds of punch. Spiced chocolate. Next time you go to a party, just sit and drink water. Odorous waters and perfumes of many kinds. Strong-scented flowers in the apartment. Tooth powders and essences and perfumed sachets compounded of drugs. Highly spiced dishes and sauces. Spiced cakes and ices. Crude medicinal vegetables for soups. I think that rules out fennel, amongst many others. Dishes of herbs, roots, and stalks of plants possessing medicinal qualities. Asparagus with long green tips, hops, and all vegetables possessing medicinal properties. Celery, onions. Are you hanging in there, Debbie? Bland food is about to rule the day.
I'm finding it quite amusing. This is quite amusing because we are a place on every corner. There's an ice cream parlor shop. There's a pastry shop. What's a patisserie? We have all varieties of every flavor and type of dental hygiene product. And the celebrities are selling their perfumes on their toilet waters. You name it, he's got it listed here. And even the health food nuts talk about eating your sprouts. So it's not jiving quite well with me, but keep going.
Yeah, he's just getting into his stride. Old cheese and meats that are in a state of decomposition. I'm not sure I would want to eat meats in a state of decomposition. Or meats that possess medicinal qualities, such as the flesh and fat of pork, ducks, geese, veal that is too young, and sour viands. Ought just as certainly to be kept from patients, as they should avoid all excesses in food and in the use of sugar and salt, as also spirituous drinks undiluted with water, heated rooms, woolen clothing next to the skin, a sedentary life in closed apartments. I think he would have been horrified by computer use, Debbie, don't you? Sedentary life in closed apartments.
Yes, and you know, I'm hearing a little bit of his own personal bias. Why did he put in the woolen underwear? I mean, he was a sulfur, people say.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have heard that.
Yeah.
Debbie, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm doing good.
Okay. Frequent indulgence in mere passive exercise, such as riding, driving, or swinging. Prolonged suckling. Taking a long siesta in a recumbent posture in bed. Sitting up long at night. Uncleanliness, unnatural debauchery. Enervation by reading obscene books. Playboy, watch out. Reading while lying down. Onanism or imperfect or suppressed intercourse in order to prevent conception. Subjects of anger, grief, or vexation. A passion for play. Overexertion of mind or body, especially after meals. Dwelling in marshy districts. Damp rooms. Penurious living, etc. What exactly does the word penurious mean, Debbie?
Oh, I'm going to have to look. Can you spell that one for me?
P-E-N-U-R-I-O-U-S.
Oh, give me a minute and you keep talking.
Okay. All these things must be as far as possible avoided or removed in order that the cure may not be obstructed or rendered impossible. Some of my disciples seem... And actually, this last sentence is beautiful. Some of my disciples seem needlessly to increase the difficulties of the patient's dietary by forbidding the use of many more tolerably indifferent things. How many more things can you add? Which is not to be commended.
Well, we can add quite a few. It depends on the time period in history in which you are living, I'm sure. The things that we are eating, the things that we are in contact with, and the things that he had in his day and age, what was popular at the time, what people overindulged in. And now you would like to know what penurious means.
Mm-hmm.
And it means extremely poor, poverty-stricken. Example is a penurious old tramp. And so its origin is the 16th century from medieval Latin penuriosus. So if anybody, it means need or scarcity from, see, penury. It's, there's your origin.
Mm-hmm. So it seems to me there are a few directions we can take this in. First of all, you mentioned, I think, a few aphorisms ago, you mentioned the issue of ritual and the importance of ritual. One of the things that I've noticed is that there are some patients who come to you, and if you forbid them more or less everything and tell them you are now going to turn over a whole new leaf in your life and you are going to change your life and then homeopathy will cure you, there's a certain sanctification of process that goes on through that. That a person really changes their entire diet, their entire regimen, their entire life focus, and takes remedies, and within this almost sterile environment, they have made a certain personal decision to get well. What do you think, Deb?
That's like going, it sounds like going cold turkey, you know, like a person who's smoking and then they say, okay, I'm quitting, and that's it. They put it away, it's gone. Now, not everybody can handle that. Not everybody can do the cleansing method and that completely sterile environment, as you say. People need to ease into it. When a person has a habit, they have a cup of coffee, one cup of coffee in the morning, and it's enjoyable for them, and it gets them going in the day. There's a lot of reasons why they may not be willing to change that habit. So,
but I think,
yeah.
I see there are some people who come and they actually want you to restrict them. They want the limitations. There are different kinds of people. For some people, all the limitations are impossible. They can't handle it. It doesn't work. But for some people, if you don't give limitations, it's like they are willing to express a commitment to changing their lives and they want the guidelines of how to express it. And like there are some people who literally will say, I can't have coffee, right? And I have to stop toothpaste, right? And I have to stop this, right? And the answer that they want is yes. They want
okay,
the limitation.
Well, what I'm hearing is that you need to assess the type of person who is walking in the door. There's going to be some people who are going to be completely rebellious, or some people who are going to be stubborn, and then there's going to be some people who are, as you say, asking for these restrictions. And those people, it's like when you when you're a kid and mm-hmm. your friend is asking you to do something and you know it's wrong, so then you give the excuse. You say, my parents said I can't do it. So you put it on them. Or a person is asking, if they're coming to you asking for advice as a professional, so when you can say to somebody, I'm not allowed to drink that alcohol because my doctors told me so. It's like a prescription maybe. So
mm-hmm.
for them,
mm-hmm.
it's a support system for them to move forward in their intention, in their commitment, in their affirmation of what they really want to do. And you are their support. Now,
I find there are different kinds of homeopaths. And in some way, like I know I'm not a policing homeopath. I find it difficult to give a ton of restrictions. What I will do if I see a remedy that I'm pretty convinced about isn't working, I'll ask them to stop coffee for a week, to stop. But generally, if someone has drunk coffee all their lives in fairly reasonable amounts, not more than one or two cups a day, I won't usually take them off coffee automatically. And I see there are other homeopaths who work that they give a long list of lifestyle change. And I see that different people are drawn to different homeopaths. And to some extent, I feel that as a homeopath, I should stay in the style that suits me, because otherwise certain elements of my treatment won't be as authentic as they could be.
Okay, so you you're saying that your method is to be more to allow people to do what their regular routine is, their ritual, and not to make major changes right away, or you find that the other ones are too restrictive. How do you see that again? Can you repeat that for me?
I see it that you need to make two assessments when your patient comes in. One assessment is who your patient is. If your patient is someone who needs a lot of limitation or needs a lot of policing or wants a lot of instructions. And the other is a self-assessment of yourself as a homeopath. Can you be the homeopath who tells a patient, you must not have this, or this? And or basically, it reminds me, my husband went to a dietitian once, and the dietitian said to him, do you eat cereal? And he said, yes, I like cereal. And she wrote down, no cereal. She asked, do you eat cakes? And he says, yeah, I like cakes. And she wrote down, no cakes. And
yeah,
it didn't
sounds like
create...
punishment.
Exactly.
It sounds like punishment. It's like, oh, you love that? Oh, well, I'm taking that goodie away from you.
Yeah, so what? Someone's going to sit across the table to me and say, you know, I really love coffee. I love having my first cup of coffee. Oh, the classic. First cup of coffee with a cigarette. That's how this person likes to start his day. So to take away from
I usually say, what do you want to do? Is this something you want to do? Do you want to change this or do you want to, you know, continue? And they'll tell you.
But what I'm trying to say is that there is room and there's actually a need for both approaches, for the more laid-back approach that I have and for the very strict approach that some homeopaths have, because some patients need and crave the strictness. Part of their problem is a certain lack of structure in their lifestyle, and that strictness gives it to them.
Okay.
Personally, I'm not one of them, but I think
It's always here's a question. You know, when you're a school teacher and you start a new grade level, does the teacher start off the class really strict and then ease up once everybody's getting the idea and self-structured? Or does the teacher start more on the lenient side and get people to like them and make it entertaining? So the question, it is your approach, and I was wondering if you could try one way and then another way depending on the person who came in, or do you as a homeopath have to stick to your own, I want to say stick to your guns, or you know, be true to yourself in what you feel is the best way that your program works.
I think there is an element of being true to yourself, and there's an element of flexibility. Like I know, as a teacher, my actual approach has often been to start strict, start very defined, and then ease up as the students get used to what's going on. I find it works better for me, and it sets the ground rules very clearly at the outset. But the same way also with remedies, when you start a new remedy, I'll say don't start anything new at the same time. You're thinking of doing a new treatment you never did before, don't start it. You don't usually drink coffee, now's not the time to start, and try to avoid drinking coffee on the first few days that you're on the remedy so that we can get something of a clear picture. So I
feel that if people are open to listen to those recommendations when you tell them that this is a scientific approach and that we want to know what is acting, what is creating the change for you. And if you do start something new, then we're going to be messed up. We're not going to know how to evaluate what is working. And that goes throughout the whole process that you use for your treatment.
I think that does, but I think the point that I'm trying to make is that in the same way, I know that when people ask me, can you help, right? They say, I have this and this problem, can you help? And I say homeopathy has a track record with helping, but I cannot promise you anything. Now, some people don't like that. They want someone who will be definitive and say, yes, I can cure you within six sessions, and there are those conventional and alternative who are willing to give those promises. Sometimes they're kept, sometimes not. Some people like a very, very definitive approach in everything to do with their treatment. They want you to restrict them. They want you to say you're going to be taking X remedy now for 2 weeks and then Y remedy for 4 weeks. They want that. Some people are much more into the go with the flow approach and let's see, let's keep a finger on the pulse and give me a lot of feedback, which is the way water dosing very often works, though dry dosing can be more spread out. So I'm saying, I suppose there's different strokes for different folks and different homeopaths for different folks. But
yeah, I agree with you. And not only is it a matching the correct selection of remedy to the individual, it's also matching the patient to the practitioner. And that has to be in sync as well. You know, you're only going to be as honest as you can with someone that you trust. And if their style of working is going to be right for you, then you'll continue on with your communication. And if not, then you might not tell them honestly that you went out and bought a whole bottle of Tic Tacs and ate them or whatever it is that you went ahead and did and went into a smoke-filled room and that's why you really got sick. So, yeah. And do you have anything else to say? Because we have just a few more minutes and there are a couple more links. Go ahead.
What I would like to say, though, is Hahnemann was not a crazy person. He did this whole long list. He must have felt, he didn't write anything that he didn't believe in. So he believed that reading while you're lying down could harm the process of the remedy or could be an influence that influences health in a negative way. So that, though, leads me to another question, whether the vital force and whether the remedies themselves, and I think we'll discuss this next session, which will be on Thursday, are the remedies and the vital force so delicate and such sensitive flowers that they can be knocked over by a spice cake?
Not for everyone, but for some people, perhaps. Mm. And maybe through his provings, through his entire group of people working with him, he found certain things to be true, and he is just informing us. Perhaps for him, when you go to lie down and you read, you fall asleep, so that means that his study is not so good, or that that's not the best way to fall asleep. There are people who teach the best environment for sleeping. So it's not foolish. It's not silly what he's written. And we probably need to, it probably take a whole year we could go through this one aphorism and go through each item to find out what he was getting at and how those particular items affect us.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to make two little call-outs, shout-outs. To one
sure,
is what makes us sick. What Makes Us Sick is a blog written by Gina Tyler, and I will give the link for that. And Hans has given us homeopathy study guide number 8, which is called Obstacles to Cure, and you'll get the link for that as well. And also the big news is that the LIGA conference will be starting tomorrow evening, May 18th, and check out the events page to see what's happening in the international world of homeopathy. And you want to give one last word before we close?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going off to make asparagus and celery soup with onions. It sounds delicious.
It does sound good, and it's in season, too.
All right.
Okay. Well, we'll
okay, and we'll carry on with this.
Excellent. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to take your Organon off the shelf and read it.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brooke on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.